Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today we're talking about crisis. While companies would prefer to operate crisis-free, such a goal is usually unobtainable. The crisis could be small, a difficult employee who takes up significant time and energy and appears quote-unquote uncoachable, or a larger crisis, supply chain issues, recalls, active shooter situations, the stuff we never really want to think about. The question, however, that you should be asking is whether managers in the organization have the skills and resources to decrease crises before they occur, in addition to the ability to respond fully and efficiently when they do occur. Our guest today is John Robertson, workforce wellness expert and culture alignment specialist of Fort Log Services, Inc. And we're going to be talking about the skills managers need to weather a crisis. Welcome, John, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tani. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you about this.
I'm also looking forward to this conversation because you and I have spoken in the past. And one of the things, you know, you have a lot of different concepts and ways in which you look at problems, which I find really interesting. And honestly, even since our last conversation, I've found ways to implement it in my own practice and my own management of people. Before we really get into today's topic, though, why don't you tell our listeners who may not know anything about you or about First what Fort Log Services does and the services it offers?
So Fort Log Services is really simple. Fort, safe place and frontier. You got to have a vision. In North America, in football, it's called an end zone. You got to know where you're going. And a log is a journal to sail the seas because there's no point going there alone. We have to help people journey with us, even when sometimes they feel seasick. And I kind of got into this like many of us in our professions. I got into this through the back door. What I discovered was a lot of people and organizations were doing whatever, Groundhog Day, whack-a-mole, and they were always reacting to whatever was going on. And because of my wiring personality, I was, okay, there's got to be a better way. Like, don't get me wrong. Trainers love making money by selling the same program, different title, different words, but every 2 to 5 years, it's the same program. One of my values doesn't allow me to do that because I like to have integrity or credibility or those other values that, okay, John, you're selling the same Kool-Aid, but you now call it grape drink. And so that's kind of how I got into it. And so rather than treating ill or injured, why don't we grow thriving and healthy?
I definitely like that concept. So Fort Log Services, kind of you and your team, you're going to provide leadership coaching, but it sounds like more out of the box kind of coaching. So we're not going to see the same presentation that you've given to four other executives in different organizations who make a different type of widget or provide a different type of service, but really kind of understanding who we are as individuals or as entities to help us kind of be the stronger, more dynamic leaders that I think a lot of us have the potential to be.
And you're bang on. And that's part of the reason the domain is .co, because .com is business, .org is a not-for-profit. .co, from my origin, is I come alongside. So colleague, collaborator, coach, and we partner. So I'm not coming in to say, here's the snake oil you need to drink that'll cure whatever ails you. What's your focus? What does a healthy workforce mean? What does it mean for your people to thrive? What does it mean for your leaders to thrive? Because let's be honest, Tani, one of the things that's happening is a lot of leaders are getting shot at from both sides. frontline and external perceptions, whatever that means.
I think you're absolutely right. And it's something that I do want to talk to you more about, kind of all of the pressures that our managers see from all, you know, I love how you're noticing it and focusing on it from all sides, because I think there's a lot of times that our leaders feel as though they're in a can't win situation. And any advice and guidance that we can help provide to help them have the tools so that they feel as though they actually do have control, some autonomy, and the ability to weather the storms that are going to come up, you know, no matter how much we proactively try to protect ourselves, but really making sure that they have the resources to do that. And honestly, you know, that leads us to why you and I are talking today, and crisis and how we respond.
So, Tawny, I need to clarify for the listeners first, because you and I did chat about this and I don't want to skip over it. Please, if people remember nothing, if your listeners remember nothing else, please remember the event is never the real crisis. So, for example, somebody saying, oh, John, you're ugly and your mom dresses you funny. You know, that might be a significant crisis for some people. For people like me, I know I'm ugly and my mom doesn't dress me anyway. So I'm sorry, your opinion goes into the file 13 garbage pail. But it's helping people understand. And this is where a lot of leaders get caught. Because what is the crisis here? Because it's not the event. And for example, a beloved employee, and this is a real-time scenario, a beloved employee, and I don't know what she was or what they were, but say 20 plus years person. But you know those kinds of people in your workplace that everybody loves, even when they speak the truth, it's things, but you still love them?
Yes, absolutely.
She was diagnosed with breast cancer. Okay, so is the event, the crisis, cancer? Absolutely not. The crisis was not the event of cancer. The crisis was the impact it was having because of who and the ripple.
And I think that that ripple kind of, I think that's a really good way to look at it. And, you know, you can use whatever either metaphor or imagery you want to use, whether or not, you know, it is the skipping of the stone and how that's going to affect everyone, the butterfly effect. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You can have two employees who the same exact, you know, set of facts is happening, and the difference in how it affects the organization, depending on who they are, depending on how much credibility they have within the organization, how far their reach is from a mentoring perspective, from an emotional connection standpoint, all of those things. You know, we've often talked, you and I, kind of about third parties and the role that they play in the crisis. So let's kind of keep using that same scenario that you have. Who are the third parties that potentially kind of we would be looking at and that could play a role in a crisis like that?
So, for example, the ripple could be customers, clients, whatever we want to call the people who deal with, like in this particular situation, this person was an administrator, like an office admin, executive assistant, regardless of the title. But she was the face or the voice to the organization. So what happens now is, or what is happening, is every time somebody called, they would call and say, where's Susie Q? Why isn't she answering? Which brings the whole situation back up. And one of two things happen. People get tired of talking about it, so they get curt on the phone. And now the client customer is saying, well, why are you getting ticked off with me? Or if the cancer is progressing and the battle is not going in a good direction, it's kind of like throwing it in a person's face. Tawny, the best example I can use for this for you and I is think about a funeral, a death of a loved one that you have been through, or a pet. And every time somebody brings that person up, so I heard about your brother, sister, mother, father, spouse dying. How are you doing? And it's like, wow, every time I get on the phone or meet this person, it's back in my face. And it's a huge ripple, because now how do I have a script to the client so I don't get curt because I'm tired of talking about it, or deal with my own sense of grief?
Yeah, and it's interesting kind of to think about it from that perspective. And especially now we go into a business, like taking that scenario into that business environment too, where we're not only worried about the employee's well-being. So we're worried about the employee who's suffering. We're worried about the employee who is kind of dealing with the ripples, kind of, and that could be one employee, it could be multiple employees. And then we're also dealing with kind of running an organization. Do our customers feel as though they're being heard? Are some of them upset that they're out of the loop? Or, you know, how far and wide do these reach? And then when we go back to specifically kind of the scenario that we're discussing, something that is extremely, extremely personal to an individual. And in some cases, maybe something that you actually cannot share, that they've asked you not to share, that they're very private people. And it's just Susie Q's on a leave of absence. And you're getting pushed for more information that you can't provide because you want to still respect your employees' wishes, what they're looking for, but then also make sure that your clients know that you value them and their relationship. It's just that your hands are tied in some way.
Well, and part of the problem that we're living in right now is, in the absence of information, people volunteer. So whether it be social media or whether it be what we used to call as kids, the broken telephone game. By the time the message gets spread around, it is so far away from any facts that, and that's why one of the things that I work with people around, organizations around, is the person is off on leave, 100%. However, can I have your permission to share so that we don't create a bigger issue for you when you return, or a bigger issue for us? So, for example, they are off on a leave as they have some challenges that they need to address. We are respecting their wish to resolve those challenges so they can go back to work with their head in the game. Hopefully, you will respect their wishes. And what it does is it shuts the gossip train down.
And it's interesting because, you know, you and I have both dealt with some of the employees that, while that should be sufficient, who just can't, who don't and can't accept that. Do you find that, you know, the way that the media plays a role in our lives right now, whether or not it's social media, whether or not it is just general kind of broadcast media and the availability of it, 24-hour news, kind of the social media at all times, you wake up in the morning and, you know, your phone is filled with all the things that happened while you're sleeping. How do you find that that's affecting our ability to either accept what's being told to us from management or from senior individuals, or generally our ability to respond when we're in these situations? Because I say to people all the time, more knowledge isn't always better, because the more knowledge that you have, sometimes, like, with that knowledge, you have to take action. While if you were in the dark about something, you know, maybe that was healthier.
Well, and it was our GP who taught us this. Her comment was, when we have a test result come back, if you choose to Google your results, then please don't waste my time meeting with me. Google is not gospel. And one of the things that always comes out, and this is why I call it the hot water teabag effect, one of the things that always comes out is the organization or individual's values. And if I am underemployed, which means I'm minding other people's business, I will not be satisfied with what you tell me, which is just a value statement. And one of the things that people can do, and I've trained people who have the zero Gifting. I have the gifting. I like to stir the pot just to see what people's reactions are. So when I say something, I like to say it gossipy, but I like to say it so the person's standing right there so I can see their face and watch the reaction. And then I always follow with, why would you talk behind a person's back? Say it to their face so you can see the reaction. Far more fun. But I share that with you because I've taught a couple people this stuff because they're not wired that way. They like to keep everybody calm, smooth, and it's a simple solution. Yes, I heard that perspective. But you and I know there's actually three sides to truth. There's what you just told me. There's the other person's version of truth. And then what really happened is somewhere in the middle of those perspectives. So thank you for sharing with me your version of truth. And then walk away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And with that, it's time for a break. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is John Robertson, workforce wellness expert and culture alignment specialist of Fort Log Services, Inc. And we're talking about the skills managers need to weather a crisis. Before the break, John, you and I kind of were talking about, you know, a crisis and how we have third parties who are affected by it. There's a ripple effect. There's the person who usually is at the heart of kind of the crisis itself. When we're dealing with crisis, one of the words and phrases I think that comes shortly thereafter is burnout. And when we talk about burnout, we're talking about turnover. Talk to me about, in your perspective, kind of how are crisis and wellness connected? How are these two concepts? How do they fit together?
And this sounds really inappropriate or dark humor or whatever I'm supposed to call it. But the upside to crisis is we never have to wonder what's important to a person or an organization. And part of what wellness does and crisis does is it reveals, is wellness a checklist on a to-do item that never gets done? Or is wellness a value that we are going to be motivated to achieve? We're not going to keep everybody healthy. That's not my point. But values are always short-term costly for long-term benefit. Always. So if I value wellness, a crisis will reveal the kind of the way we've always done it, what's worked before, the Band-Aid on the cut juggler versus, okay, you know what? This worked really well. Or so one of the things that I do is it's kind of four key components. So first is to transform that traditional crisis response. First is the leaders have to be healthy themselves. And I'm talking in a battery sense. I'm not talking in a, I've got my crap all together and I'm a wonderful human being. Look at me. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about physically, emotionally, psychologically. They need to be clear on their values. Secondly, there needs to be an intervention plan. Like when things don't go according to plan, what's the plan to address it? Then there needs to be the team's kind of work, not Microsoft app, but the team's work after to say, okay, what went well? What didn't go well? What gaps did we have? And then the fourth piece is that refinable new norm. Because if we do not, and I do not believe in defining a new norm, I used to teach it this way and I realized, but as we grow towards the new norm, our definitions will change. So when I started out being a parent, or sorry, BC, before children, I had my perspective of what it meant to be a parent. As I was a newbie parent, some of the stuff that used to think about a crisis is not the event. Some of the stuff that used to spin me out, then my kids, our kids became teenagers. And it's like, yeah, that's not really a big stressor. And now they're young adults. I know this is unprofessional, but we have two grandchildren, just brand new, like 2-year-old, no, 1-year-old or 9-month-old anyways. And we're now laughing because some of the stuff they get stressed about, it's like, yeah, you ain't seen nothing yet. Wait till they get a little bit older. And I know I probably shouldn't be that immature, but I really am enjoying it. And so that refinable new norm is key for leaders to keep refining. Because if wellness is to be a value, it's not a program. It's not a once and done. It's not a transfer of information. That stuff doesn't work.
When you talk about an intervention plan, I think a lot of our listeners are thinking to themselves, but isn't kind of the definition of a crisis that it's something that you didn't foresee. So when you're talking about intervention plans, are you talking, you know, is it the resources? Is it a written document? Is it if we have, you know, employee relations issue, this is our first step. If we have a supply chain issue, this is our first step. Or kind of when you say intervention plan, you know, what does that mean?
So when it's anchored around values, and I use values as kind of the tetherball pull, what it does is allows something for people to pivot around, swing around. So an intervention plan, which is values anchored, say, because the event is not the real crisis, what's the most effective tactic and strategy to support our people? So it could be the employee relations group. It could be an EAP, employee assistance program. It could be a professional medical person. On the other hand, it might be somebody sitting at their desk saying, so, what's up? I've noticed the change in behavior. You were actually, I'm going to give you an illustration. There was a woman, and I'm not picking on administrators, but the best example is, and I think I used Susie Q last time, so I'll use Karen this time. But Karen was one of the high performers. Man, if you needed a job done, if you needed it done with excellence, she could do Excel sheets, she could do software and have it done in milliseconds. Like just the textbook person that everybody wanted to work. Then COVID happened and Karen got sent home like many people and worked from home. And then she came back to work and she wasn't the same one who left. So there was a little tardiness in her work and there was a little... wasn't errors, but it wasn't really done to the same standard. And then they went home again. And then she came back to work and she was snippy with people, which is a nice way of saying edgy in other words, but she was snippy with people. And long story short, I got a phone call from a colleague to say, would you mind if I gave your name to the leader of the organization? Because the leader is really upset with the attitude of Karen. I said, no problem. Leader called and we had a meeting and long story short, I said, what was your relationship like with Karen before COVID? Well, it's not like we were getting together on the weekend, but we got along really well and we were friends. And work colleague friends. And I said, okay, ask her if she'd be willing to meet with you and with me, and you support me meeting. And so I got the phone call back, email back to say, she's willing to meet with you, John, but I need to be there. Well, that's perfect. So I met with Karen and I said, Karen, this is what I've heard. And I described the behaviors. You don't know me from Adam, and some would call you fortunate, but what's changed? What are we missing? Karen proceeded to tear up and said, when I first got sent home, my husband fell at his work and broke his hip. And his workplace wants him off the payroll, and we can't afford him to be on short-term disability, never mind LTD, while we're waiting for surgery. Added to that, my brother was diagnosed, and the second time I went home, my brother was diagnosed with a brain tumor and died, and we weren't able to have a funeral for him. And my son is having mental health challenges and became suicidal, and I couldn't get help. And I learned that I looked at her boss and I said, and you think her performance is an issue? I'm surprised she's at work.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things that we do, Tawny, is we have to get people. And I love what William Bridges calls it in managing transitions. He uses Moses leading the people out of Egypt. He calls it an MBWA. Moses been walking around. And Moses visited the family campfires to check in on people. Trust as a leader requires initiative. The open door policy has never worked. I'm not walking into your open door. It's never worked.
Absolutely.
Trust requires initiative to say, hey, John, or hey, Tawny, I noticed this changed. What's up? What's going on? And I'm not a therapist. I'm not a counselor. I'm just caring.
I love that. And I think you're absolutely right about kind of just a general open door policy. It doesn't work, because if there's not trust, if there's not already a relationship, I can't imagine walking into someone who I don't have a relationship with and kind of throwing that at their testament.
Tawny, I'm interrupting with my mom's voice in my head saying, John, don't interrupt. But can you imagine you and I work together. You barely know me except to pass in the coffee pot hallway. And I all of a sudden message you on whatever the app we're using. Hey, Tawny, I heard this news. Let me know how I just care for you. It's like.
No, absolutely. And the same thing where I can imagine that Karen's crying, not just is getting teary eyed, not just because there is a lot going on in her life that's very stressful, but that she also then has to share. You're a stranger who she's, just met. And granted, she understands, hopefully at some level, that the company is trying to do right by her, but to still open up and to share all of those things, especially if, let's say Karen isn't a sharer. Let's say Karen's a very, very private person generally. And the whole reason she was coming into work was because, one, she needed to work, but two, she wasn't going to say that she needed time, because that's not Karen's personality, because work is work and home is home. And I'm amazing at my job, and I can continue to be amazing at my job. And this kind of leads to, in part, my next question. We know that no two leaders are the same, right?
Yeah.
And that everyone has strengths and they have weaknesses. And with hope, we have leaders who can acknowledge those weaknesses. But if your leader's weaknesses are this interpersonal kind of ability to connect with people, are there ways in which we can provide them tools that it becomes either a little bit easier for them to connect, or at least for people to kind of understand that they are a resource? Or do we just rely on other leaders for that? Because interpersonal relationships sometimes are difficult to, I don't want to say coach, but it's authentic or it's not.
Well, and goes back to our comment at the beginning of the show was, there's a never ending list of programs. So what, people can do is sell all these various people skill courses. But the key, I'm not a fan of that, because that's like taking your whatever, your offensive lineman, your tight end, and saying, okay, I need you to play defensive back or safety. Yeah, once in a while, there's a person that can play all those positions, but majority of time, not true for most of us. And the key is to be thinking of a baton relay race. So if I'm that leader who is not strong people skills, by the way, you made an interesting insight that Karen trusting me to open up. I actually got credibility because the person who gave my name to the boss is how I introduced myself. And Karen trusted the person who gave my name, not me. So that's the key. What's my reputation? What's my credibility? What's the brand, if you will, of my leadership in the organization? That's first. If I'm not clear on building my brand in the organization, by the way, brand comes from the root word of character, how people describe us non-physically. But my brand within the organization, but then the second part of that is, so if I'm meeting with you and say, be honest. You know, Tawny, one of the things I struggle with, because it's not in my wheelhouse, it's not one of my strong suits, is I come across uncaring, but it's just not one of the things I'm really good at because I like to fix, I like to help, and I'm not really sure how to support. So, Tawny, I've noticed a change in some of your behaviors, and I'm concerned. I'm not a counselor, therapist. Would you mind if you and I met with somebody? Because I'd like to know how to support you best. And I also know that this is not one of the things that I'm going to be phenomenal at, and I'll end up ticking you off. So can I ask for help on how to be an effective colleague leader with you?
And I honestly love that. And, you know, it's interesting that I love that response, John, because I think one of the things that we lack as a society, as a culture, is the ability to say, I don't know, or I need help. Those are really hard words for people to say. And it's not just at work. It's in our personal lives. It's with our children. To be able to respond and say, I don't know, in a world in which, you know, knowledge is everywhere, the good, the bad, whether or not it's real advice and counsel or it's snake oil, you know, it's there. So I think for a lot of people, it becomes that much more difficult to admit, I don't know what to do here. And I need another, I need not just a resource, but I need somebody else. I need a support from a physical person.
And Tawny, what you're putting your finger on is actually fascinating because we talk about appreciation, recognition, transparency, and we sell programs based around these things. But look at the repercussions. If I'm honest and say, yeah, this probably isn't one of my strong suits. Actually, I have people who have said, my wife's name is Carolyn. I've actually had people say, John, bring Carolyn. Everybody loves her. And so I get this. But when we are transparent, I don't know. Can I ask for help? I'm not saying you need help, Tawny. Here's your 800 number, call them. I'm saying I need help because I want to be effective. But watch what happens to appreciation and recognition. You're appreciated, you're recognized. The person I ask for help, to get help from, is appreciated, is recognized. And nobody's done anything except said one of those four-letter words, help and care.
I love it. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, the Healthcare Purchase Alliance, Paper Trails, and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is John Robertson, workforce wellness expert and culture alignment specialist of Fort Log Services, Inc. And we've been talking about the skills managers need to weather a crisis. Before the break, we are talking about help and care and some really big four-letter words, probably not the four-letter words you expected to be hearing in the course of the podcast, but some really important four-letter words that is HR specialists and leaders in an organization, probably not the first four-letter words that you thought we were going to talk about today. But, you know, when we're talking about words, one of the things, John, you know, we've spoken in the past, and you have a principle called the double click principle. And you've talked about it generally, but specifically when we're looking at a company's values. What's the double click principle, and why is it important?
Okay, first of all, I'm going to clarify. It's not my principle. It's a principle I'm trained in. Okay, so I want to give credit to, it's called Conversational Intelligence by Dr. Judith Glasser. She died, and I got training from Judith before, so it's still going on. But so conversational intelligence, and the premise of double clicking is a really simple one, like a desktop icon on a computer. In order to open the folder, the file, we double click on it to open it up. With values, one of the most important pieces is to double click on it. So for example, respect, excellence, any one of those. Okay, Tawny, what does respect mean for you? Karen, what does respect mean for you? Tom, what does respect mean for you? And double click on it, because all values have to have a definition and a description. And one of the things that I was just doing this work last Thursday with a group, and they were getting into this discussion around a core value of integrity. And I always get hooked by that, because I've done business with people while putting the double click test to work. We don't share the same definition of integrity.
Which I think for a lot of people would be surprising, because I think a lot of people in their mind are like, well, wait a second, integrity, like what, we can all go to the dictionary and look it up. And it seems like, I think, a topic that everyone should be on the same page about. So I think it's interesting kind of, you know, that.
Well,
you
and what found, you put your.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what you put your finger on is we go to the definition. However, integrity has to do with ethics and morals. And morals is our definition of right or wrong. And that's where we run into problems, because my definition of what is right or the best may not be the same definition that you have about what is right or the best, which I'm not, who cares if it which one's better. But the principle is we don't share the same benchmarks.
And I think that, you know, if we wanted to dig even deeper into this, because I've been giving this a lot of thought as well. A lot of my work, you know, I deal with bias a lot and implicit bias. And it's almost a form of implicit bias that we take for granted that like integrity means the same thing, because I want to work with people who have very similar values. I want to work with people who are quote unquote like me. And I hear from managers a lot of times, well, like, oh, I absolutely love them. They remind me of me. Like, you know, that's one of those ways that people describe other people, but it's couched so much in an implicit bias of like, well, of course, because I am amazing and I'd love to work with myself. And I always say to people, you know, I don't want to marry. I wouldn't marry me. I wouldn't. I would have a tough time kind of in those formats and pretty honest. But I think that's taken me a long time to get to and to be honest about and those type of things. But if we don't have a culture where we are able to look inward and say, well, wait a second, I don't actually want to be surrounded by other Tawnies. I want like Bobs and Bills and Johns and Sallys and Karens and all those people. But if you can't say that, right, then I think that we find ourselves almost in the same situation of like, well, wait, everyone's double click. We should be able to double click all the way down, and we're just, we have the same viewpoint on everything, right?
And what you're describing is, so for example, if you are the owner of the company, if you have a core value of profit, I don't need to have that value, but I need to understand that it is a value in the workplace. So for me to have integrity means that I know at some point we will collide on that value, because I do things that are not always motivated by the profit line. Sometimes I do things that I probably should have charged for, but you know what? I can live with me.
It's interesting though, because even in my mind, even when we're talking about profit, I think that there's short-term gain and long-term gain, and the things that you do for free have long-term gain. And whether or not it's just by word of mouth or it's because you yourself have a different level of wellness than you did beforehand, and therefore either your burnout or your stress or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, could, I don't want to say be your downfall, but I think honestly, a lot of people will see stress, anxiety, burnout as being the downfall of their professional career.
Okay. So let me give you the visual so you don't have to use the word downfall. They can be the stone in the shoe. If we don't address it, and I mean, how many times have we had a stone in the shoe that brings us to our knees? We dump it out and we think that's all it was.
The tiny little grain of sand. Yeah.
And so one of the things that HR people have to, and leaders especially, have to be intentional on is in the hiring tactic, how are we going to hire somebody who is not like me? The only way to do that is personalities, natures, I call them, and values. It's the only way, because those are also the flashpoints in conflict.
You know, and that's it's really interesting, because I feel like during the hiring process, one of the things that people say so often is, oh, I really like them. And when you try to dig at you know, dig into that and you do the why, I like, you know, three whys, which is very, I think, similar in concept to that, the double click method, but why? A lot of times you hear someone say, well, we have the same values. And to me, that becomes tough, because I've never been on an interview where I've been asked, give me your value statement. Yeah. And maybe it is happening. Maybe I'm just like, I've missed it. I've missed a boat on your value statement, as opposed to your, you know, 2-minute elevator speech about why you want to be here and what you bring to the table. But it does make sense that in the world in which we find ourselves, both socially and also from a corporate standpoint, that the value statement drives who we are as people and then how our organization runs.
And that's the, going back to that upside of crisis and wellness. Many times people's values reflect their nature, personality. So therefore, life lessons impact our nature. So for example, if I was abused growing up, I might come across a little bit like a sergeant in a military, when in fact it's more a reflection of my nature protecting myself so that I don't get that to happen again or allow that to happen. If I don't do the work to clarify my values, they reflect my wiring. Hence why in an interview, I can hire somebody because, well, I like their values. And really all I'm saying is there's something in their nature, personality type that I, yeah, you know what? There's a connection. I can illustrate this. I was being interviewed. It was for a victims group, like a victims unit service. And they had their checklist. And it was a panel interview, three of them interviewing me. And so they were going through their checklist. And I said, so when do I ask my questions? Well, why don't you wait till the end? Because I'm sure we'll answer them by then. I said, okay. Got to the end of the interview and they said, okay, thank you very much for the interview. And I said, well, you told me I could ask my questions. Oh, well, I thought we'd answer them. Well, no, I have a couple. Okay, go ahead. So my first question is, I saw you with your check sheet. So as I used the right buzzwords, you would circle it or check it. What would happen if you missed somebody who didn't happen to use your buzzwords, but actually was the best person? And one of them said, well, what do you mean? I said, so for example, you would look for words like supportive and nurturing and empathetic and caring. And I would say a positive and encouraging environment. I'm saying the same thing. I'm just not warm, fuzzy group hug, all your buzzwords. One of the people on the panel busted out laughing and then caught himself and said, probably not my best response, John, but really interesting question. I'll let them answer. And so once they fumbled around about it and they came back with an answer that really wasn't an answer. And I said, okay, now my second question is, apart from money, why would somebody want to work in this unit? And it was crickets. Like it was, there was nothing. And of course, I love that. It's called an awkward pause, but I love that moment because, and your answer? Anyways, I share all that with you, Tawny, because those two questions got me the job.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, to me, it goes back to, and I've been thinking about it as you've been talking, the four letter words, the help and care. And if our team is just like us, then how are we going to get the support from them that we need to be effective when we all have the same skill set? Yeah. So really, really important concepts there. And so thank you, John.
And Tawny, the other part, because I know some of the listeners will be thinking, oh, it's great, he got the job. But let me turn that around. If their answer was not right, or I ticked them off, then the real question is, do I want to work for an organization like that?
Absolutely. No, that's a very good point. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com. We'll be right back.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is John Robertson, workforce wellness expert and culture alignment specialist of Fort Log Services, Inc. And today we've been talking about the skills managers need to weather crisis. Earlier, John, you and I were talking a lot about wellness, and I think it's really kind of moved throughout the course of this whole dialogue and conversation. But we also live in a culture, and we talked about the four-letter word help, where I think a lot of times people feel uncomfortable saying that they need a break. That's a five-letter word, but I think similar, a difficult word to say. They need a break. They need help, that they can't do it. You know, insert any way to show vulnerability. Is that, what do we do? What do we do there?
So I was just doing some training yesterday for some people working in the correction system, not residents, but the employees.
I like that. I think it's important that you do make that distinction, John.
And I use the traffic light example because it's the best way to illustrate batteries. If the leader's battery is not in the green, we can't boost somebody else's battery. And the reason I use traffic lights is we have problems because of traffic lights. Everybody knows, or 99% of us know, that green light means go. 99% of us legally know red light means stop.
It's a very good point because we just legally know that.
And where we run into problems is the yellow light. For some people, the yellow light means go faster. For some people, the yellow light means slow down. Usually they're following each other at a traffic light. But anyways, in the workplace, when a leader's battery is in the yellow, human nature is we go faster, get busier, and we actually push our battery into the red. And instead of people thinking about whatever, unplugging from work is going to recharge the battery, that's the same thinking that says put your cell phone on airplane mode to recharge it.
Yeah, that doesn't work. I've tried that before. That doesn't work.
You and me both. And so one of the things that we have to do is where's the leader's battery? Is it in the green? If it's in the yellow, what can we do to support that person to plug into things to recharge? Guess what we're doing with our colleagues at work? What's your battery level? Yellow, green, or red? What can we do to plug in to charge?
Absolutely. I mean, I actually absolutely love that analogy. And I think that it's so helpful. And I have so very much enjoyed our conversation today, John. You've given me a lot of things that I need to continue to think about it and different ways to look at some of the problems that I think so many organizations are currently facing. So I really appreciate you giving up your time for this discussion and for, you know, sharing kind of this wisdom with all our listeners today. So thanks so much.
It's been my pleasure. And most importantly, I hope we've given people the things to think about because it goes right back to the child expression, Tani, when it comes to leadership. You know, the monkey see?
Monkey do.
Monkey do. And, you know, that's all leadership really needs to be encouraged to do.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, John. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.